Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona, Rebecca, we are back at it again. It seems our listeners really like when we do these industry deep dives with segments and various experts, and we're back at it again today, right?
That's right. Well, we decided that we were going to pick up some of the most popular industries, Mark, and one of them is healthcare. But healthcare isn't just what you think. It's not just your kidney dialysis center or a little mini hospital. But healthcare encompasses, as far as our EB5 direct pool project's concerned, it encompasses senior assisted livings, veterinary practices, et cetera, et cetera.
So a lot of our investors, we always like to hear medical or healthcare, just because we always talk about counter-cyclical projects, Mona, recession-proof projects. And I think it's going to be interesting when we hear from our two guest speakers today about the assisted living and the veterinary project on how do these compare to the other healthcare industries.
Yeah, the counter-cyclical issue is such a big deal for so many of our investors. So yeah, I thought it would be a good idea, especially as many of our investors are not really familiar with these areas.
So it sounds like we actually have two opportunities for our listeners, not just two guests, but two different opportunities. The first opportunity is understanding, yeah, we had COVID and still going through it, but countercyclical. It's actually a boon to one of the businesses that we're going to hear about later. And the other opportunity is everything we're going to be talking about is mainstream here in the U.S., but those listening overseas may think it's weird or may think it's small or not that significant, but in the U.S. it is. So I'm excited to get into it.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting and fun for our listeners out there.
I think so too, Rebecca. Our first guest is Dr. Vish. He's been serving the real estate development industry over the past 30 years and has built or rebuilt thousands of condominiums and apartment units, including senior assisted living communities and homes.
So, Dr. Vish, senior living facilities or assisted living homes are quite risky investments considered by some people, because you're dealing with people who are old, who are dying, who are sick. Why would you suggest that this is a good investment to come into?
I think, first of all, if you look at the market size for this particular industry, the seniors who are either fully ambulatory or even need some sort of assistance, the market size is so deep, it's almost like a bottomless pit. The market has been expanding. I know we lost some people during COVID, but that doesn't change the basic demographics that are prevailing in the country. The senior population is growing. So first is the size of the market. The second is the growth in the size of the market, which is, if you look at other demographic segments, and this one, if you compare, the growth has been relatively higher.
I get it. There is a need to cater to an aging population. But here's the issues. I've been reading a number of articles on this area, Dr. Vish, and I can tell you there's a lot of pros as well as cons. But one of the biggest cons for this area is the fact that staffing is your number one problem. You need to have good nurses. It's not like children or animals where it really doesn't matter. There has to be a rapport between your nurses and your population. How are you planning to handle that aspect?
I think the staffing shortage is a generalized problem across many different industries in the economy today. But in this particular industry, we are able to attract the people who got tired of dealing with COVID patients and they want to have a more pleasant environment where, yes, they do have challenges, but it's not like every day it is so stressful. So we are able to attract people, particularly nurses, if you are able to give them better than market salary, and better than competing, better than competition's work environments. So it's what you provide for the employees, keep them motivated, and offer something better than market. Those are all kind of like a cocktail mix.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. And of course, with nurses and everything, we all know that there is job creation. So as far as EB5 is concerned, there is plenty of job creation. But one of the other issues that has been brought up as well is the fact that some of these assisted living homes are just not making money because they're relying on Medicaid, and the payments for Medicaid are just not coming through in time, or they're delayed. And there's often a cash flow shortage, which again leads to staffing shortages, which again bounces back and have that you have a bad reputation, you get less patients.
Fortunately, we have been focused mainly on market rate facilities. For us, the Medicaid proportion is a very, very small number, if at all, because our facilities are top in class in terms of what we offer and the luxury and the comfort that we offer tends to attract the upper demographics, and they are all private pay. And so we do not face that issue. But I think the people who are extremely focused on Medicaid as their main source of income, that may be a different situation.
So Dr. Fish, with investors, and not just EB5 investors, because we're talking private equity investors as well, or any investor that comes in looking at senior assisted living, I think a lot of them will want to understand the revenue streams. Is it coming from one stream? Is it coming from multiple? What makes your project, your assisted living, unique and different from others where investors would see the benefit of coming into your project?
Well, Rebecca, mentioned that Medicaid was only one stream, one revenue stream for him.
Right. I think that's why Rebecca wants to know more details, like what other streams.
Yeah, what other streams? Just Medicaid, what else are you looking at? Because you're not just focusing on, you know, you have independent assisted living. You have those who require help. You need those who need memory care. I think what I'm trying to come to is that what we've seen with your project is there's just different, you know, diversification.
Yes.
And I think that's what investors want to hear and see. And what makes your project unique to that?
Yes, we have several revenue streams. One is independent living. This is for people who are fully ambulatory, and all they need is some sort of food being offered to them. Otherwise, they are able to take care of themselves. So we have that available. They don't need any other assistance. The next revenue stream is assisted living. There are people who are partially ambulatory, but they need some assistance. The assistance can be in terms of, say, changing clothes, or maybe remind me of medications, et cetera, et cetera. And the third level is really memory care, where we have people having problems, remembering things, dementia, et cetera. So they require a very high level of care because, they can simply start to walk out of the facility. So the beauty of this concept that we have, what we would call as continuing care retirement community, is that people come to independent living, they stay there for 3-4 years, and then they move to assisted living. They don't have to go anywhere else. We accommodate them into the assisted living facility. And then if they have other challenges in terms of daily living, then they move to the memory care facility. So we have these different streams of income. Besides, we can also have like a respite care, which is really a 30-day stay. Some people are just, are undergoing some rehabilitation, etc. That's a separate wing that we have where people can come and enter rehabilitation for a short time, like 30 days, et cetera.
So I think the takeaway from all of that, Dr. Vish, is that there is a very obvious need for senior living facilities. And of course, you would love to see investors invest into this type of project. Just to wrap up, let me ask you, the fallout from COVID-19 crisis really did hit these kind of facilities hard. How would you answer that?
Well, there is always specific winners in the game. As long as you are able to have a basic population that can come into this. For instance, we do things differently. Our location is fantastic. The setting is Allegheny Mountains. Second, we have all the utilities, or we make our own power. You know, it's fully powered by solar. It's built according to National Green Building Standards. And we proudly advertise that we have the highest level of indoor air quality. That is what the people affected with COVID are particularly concerned about. The reason we are able to offer the highest level of indoor air quality is we have a continuous supply of fresh air coming in. And so that kind of takes away this stale air sitting in the environment, in the room I'm talking about. So I think you need to carve out a niche for yourself in these highly competitive times. So that's what we do. Our location, our unique way of construction, our operating costs are lower because we use a lot of solar power. And
well, these are all excellent points for investing in your particular facility. Mm-hmm. But overall, is there a one reason why you would suggest that investors do look at assisted living care as a good EB5 project?
Oh, absolutely. This is a recession-proof industry.
Yeah, good point.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. You know, economy goes up and economy goes down, but you still need care. Mm-hmm. So that is one strongest reason to be looking at this industry for investment. And the market is steady and growing. So these are some of the reasons to consider investing in this industry.
Well, people do continue to get older, and they always require a little bit more care when they do. And it certainly makes sense to invest in something that is providing that solution for people. And COVID has been tough on everybody, but it sounds like for legitimate reasons, your senior assisted living center, Dr. Vish, is literally a breath of fresh air. So thank you for coming on the show.
Mark, that's so corny.
I enjoyed being part of the show. Thank you so much.
You know, Mark, Rebecca, that was a great insight into some of the issues relating to assisted living homes. But you know, we in our industry series, our current industry series, we have more than one aspect of healthcare. Assisted living homes is just one. The second one that we have today that we are going to discuss is something a little different. It's a veterinarian practice.
Mm. Yeah, it's not your typical healthcare area, is it?
Well, veterinarian practices can be fun, especially if you like animals. But again, you know, they are areas that a lot of our investors are probably not familiar with and are trying to maybe explore or figure out whether they are good investments, whether they are good for EB5.
That's why we're here, Mona, and that is why we're bringing on our next guest, Evan Stupler. Evan has 24 years of experience in business development in the financial sector, and his expertise is often sought on strategic and marketing planning, competitive analysis, financial analysis, budgeting, and of course, all the financial packaging that goes in with that. Evan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Evan, you're a New Yorker.
Yes, I am.
And your project is related to a veterinary practice in New York?
That is correct. Our business is veterinary for pets, for urgent care, and primary wellness care.
You know, Evan, a lot of prospective investors and EB5 clients, they want to know about different areas within the healthcare industry. But I don't think veterinary practice is one which really jumps out to them, mainly because some of them have asked me, don't vets make a lot less money than human doctors?
Sure. And the answer is no. Veterinary practices do very, very well. This is an urgent care and primary care for pets. And we're not gated or impacted by Medicare or Medicaid.
Yeah, the biggest impact is the American love of our animals.
You know, I get it, guys. I know you have pets, Mark, as well. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand, I'm not particularly a pet lover, I have to admit right now. But many of the people who are, many of our clients as well, they do come from countries where those countries don't spend money on pets. So when we talk about an investment and when we talk about, you know, EB-5, you know, and return of capital and all of that stuff, and we talk, then we start talking about a veterinary practice, they look at us and say, well, who spends money on their cats and dogs? So, So this is what we're exploring again.
That is a great viewpoint, because I can imagine a lot of listeners that don't have pets and perhaps are foreign nationals, and there's not such a big pet market wherever they live.
Right.
But here in the US, and as a pet owner myself, yes, we spend tons of money
and
on our pets.
And in the UK. And in the UK.
And lots of places. But that way, you know, if you're listening, whether you have pets or you don't have pets, just know that here in the US, we spend a lot on our pets. And that's why I'm glad we have Evan on to really explore this industry.
Sure. Well, at this point in time, almost half the population in the United States happens to own pets. So the demand for what we're doing for healthcare, medical, for pets is tremendous and only growing.
Evan, what about the supply of actual veterinarians? Are you seeing a growth in that area so that way you can cater to this growing market?
Yes, because the market has grown and is growing. There's been a tremendous amount of universities that are starting to adopt programs in the veterinary space to educate people, because it is a very safe, secure, recession-proof, COVID-proof type industry.
Yeah, that's with all healthcare, though. At this point, I think that's why investors are looking at healthcare, because of COVID, because of the whole recession-proof industry type of scenario. But is it the best practice out of all of healthcare? You know, I know Evan will say yes, but Evan, let me ask you, is your practices are in Manhattan. Is Manhattan not already saturated?
Manhattan is not. And this, what we're doing with your vet is we're using the latest technology, where most of these old line veterinary practices that are usually one to two doctors that own the practice, or as a single practitioner, use old antiquated equipment. They're not using apps to make appointments. They're not treating the customers correctly. Their hours that they're working, Mona, are actually very limited. So some of them are working 9 to 3, 10 to 4, whereas we are open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m, 7 days a week. And it's what people today want. It's the 22-year-old to the 55-year-old that resides in New York City, where they just want to jump on the web, on the app, click for their appointment, and come in, or just walk in without having to make an appointment, where they get seen 2 to 3 weeks out, you know, further along. And
yeah. I have a question, though. I have a couple of questions. So I'm not going to be nice to you, Evan, because I don't want to make life easy for you. But here's my big question. How do you keep a competitive edge? Because lots of practices, and I've done my research before this podcast, lots of practices do what you're just saying, telemedicine and everything. What's different about the technological advances that you are doing? I mean, why do you think you would be able to attract, you know, your clients, your patients to come to you?
Well, first and foremost, the most important thing, Mona, is to have the best medical care possible. Because as long as you have excellent medical care, people will come from wherever they are. It's like, you know, it would be like you wanting to go to a doctor. I'm sure there's one down the street, but if there's one that's 5 miles away, you're going to get in the car and drive to that doctor. So in that respect, we will offer the best possible medical care. And by that, I'm saying our chief medical officers are two people that I've known for 30 years, that both are graduates from Cornell Medical School, which is the number one veterinary school in the world. They're both surgeons. They have been practicing, each one of them, for over 42 years. They own 3 hospitals. So this practice comes with a tremendous amount of experience and expertise to hire these vets and provide the best care possible. And along with the newest technology, we find this to be a tremendous advantage that we have over any of these other practices. We're also, Mona, having, when you come into our locations, they're aesthetically appealing with excellent air ventilation systems, et cetera. So in the old line vet comparison, those people have old, dingy,
We get it. Okay, so one other question that I know, Rebecca, you have one too, and time is running out. But one quick question that I have for you, which is something which a lot of our investors do bring up. Many investors look to see if there are any assets. So veterinary practices, it's a service industry, and you don't actually have any assets. How would you assure an investor?
Sure. So money will certainly be in, and an asset will be the equipment that's going to be in the practice.
Are you talking like medical equipment?
Equipment, mm-hmm. Sure. Medical equipment will be assets. Our real assets, obviously, is the doctors that are on board. And what we're
getting at. Sells the doctors?
Well, it's a medical practice. So yeah. The doctors, we're going to give them percent ownership in the practice so that we do golden handcuff them to the practice. And they're going to be working very hard because they're incentivized.
Right. So, Evan, you're part of our industry series, and we're taking a look at different industries within the healthcare arena. When it comes down to it, investors are going to ask about financials. So how would your revenue streams compare to other healthcare areas?
Right. And how are they different?
The answer to that is a few ways. First, as far as insurance, most people that own pets do not have pet insurance. In the neighborhood of 93% of the people don't carry pet insurance. So that being said, when people come in to have a procedure done or for care, they pay by credit card in full on the day of service. So we don't have receivables. We also don't have a Medicare, Medicaid insurance type issue where we're waiting for money. So we're getting paid in full. So we can, by that way, be able to look forward in our business model and be able to control, obviously, the cash flow and the expenses very easily.
So essentially, your profit and loss structure, essentially your costs are around keeping pets healthy rather than chasing bookkeeping.
That's correct. From an operational standpoint, the business cash flows every day.
Nice.
And as I said, we don't carry receivables, so we know exactly where we are at all times.
Mm-hmm.
That gives us the security as well as to the investors.
You know, Evan, I have looked at the figures and I do appreciate that more than 68 million US households have pets and people get emotionally attached. I'm not a pet owner, but I do appreciate it. And yes, it's going to fuel the veterinary industry and make it more recession resistant. I get it. And I know Rebecca and I have a lot to say on this in a few minutes, but I just want to thank you, Evan, for coming on our show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You know, Mark and Rebecca, both of these industries are not ones which are familiar to a lot of the overseas, a lot of our investors from other countries, because some of these countries don't really spend money on old assisted living homes. The old parents stay at home. It would be an insult to send out your grandmother to an assisted living home. And secondly, they don't spend money on pets. So I feel that these are industries which make so much money. They're great EB5 projects. They create there's natural job creation. There's a lot of revenue, but our investors don't really understand it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Mona. And I think that's why we do have this series to educate our investors, and especially our foreign investors, and letting them know, like in the US, this is what we're seeing. It's a different mindset out here, especially, as you said, with assisted living, with both husband and wife working. It's we're going to a different area, and you're seeing more those becoming more popular.
Yeah. I mean, what is it? Pet care is a $100 billion industry. But at the same time, assisted living homes are equally as high. But it all depends. That's a general statement. So I think people can look at all of these figures and stuff. Each project, though, we cannot stress enough, you have to look at each project individually. The location of the project, the management of the project, the cap of the project. It's good to know about the industry, but each project should be looked individually.
Yeah, and I think we've discussed that. I mean, if if our listeners are out there, we've discussed that so much on our podcast throughout the years that it doesn't matter, like you said, about the industry or where it is. It's that specific project. So you have to look at, you know, and conduct your due diligence on all the factors within that project itself.
But, you know, Mark, things like technological advancements are so huge now. I mean, what you can do in telemedicine, for example, you couldn't do that 10 years ago. So if you have an old facility, you say, oh, well, that assisted living isn't making money. But guess what? This new one is, because they suddenly have all this technology.
Right. And it's not even so much that all of a sudden they have all this technology, but the billions that are spent in the insurance industry that has funded this technology to increase the efficiency of their operations. Well, now that's trickling down to things like the senior assisted living centers and the veterinary clinics. They get to benefit from that big company investment in all this technology. And they're like, oh, this technology is cheap off the shelf. Now I can use it. And I appreciate you both, Mona and Rebecca, for letting our listeners know how not just important, but how mainstream it is here in the U.S. Within a few miles of me, there are many senior assisted living centers and veterinary clinics, and I just assume it's that way everywhere. But I guess you're right. It's different in the U.S., and it's an opportunity for some foreign investors.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.